Like I said, I'm so glad that you're here joining us this morning, and we get to talk about, I mean resurrection. Who doesn't want to talk about resurrection? Who can't use a little more resurrection in their life? I know I can. I mean, I daily need some resurrection. So whenever you get a chance to talk about resurrection, it's like, ooh, totally, let's go for it. But the challenge always is, if you're a preacher, you know, Resurrection Sunday is like your Sunday. And there's always this like added pressure. It's like, ooh, what are you going to talk about this year? And I was thinking about, okay, well, what do we talk about? And there's been a bunch of things that have been inspiring me, things that I've been noticing over the past couple of weeks. And I keep a journal. I write down all the crazy things. So we went to the zoo, right? And so it was me and Junior, and we just each had our two kids. And we were texting each other later that night, and it was like, I am so tired. He's like, I'm so tired too. Whoa, just. So I'm glad that I've kind of recovered a bit from that one. I think I'm still a little tired though. But like I said, so I snap pictures of things that I think are interesting. And we were just standing there, and I'm kind of giving away a sermon illustration that I'll probably use 4 years from now, but you'll all forget it by then anyway, so it's okay. And we were standing there, and all of a sudden we heard this loud bang, and we both looked, we're like, what is that? It was a peacock that was banging the bumper of one of the trucks that was there, because the peacock saw its own reflection in the bumper. It thought it was some predator coming after it, but it was really just fighting itself. Think about the wisdom contained. So I sent out the picture, of course. And like I said, we'll talk about that about 4 years from now, once you've all forgotten about it. But that's what I do. I keep a journal. I write down things that inspire me, things that I notice. Sometimes I have no idea what they're going to mean or where they'll come out sometime in the future. And that's what I want to talk about this morning, some of the things that are in my journal. And for this resurrection, because remember, Easter, that's like bunnies and chocolate, and that's fun and whatnot. But resurrection holds a little different meaning. I mean, Easter is nice, but resurrection is inspiring and hopeful and life-changing. Easter is what you do when the kids run around grabbing Easter eggs. But resurrection, it transforms your life. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. And so for this resurrection sermon, I want to talk about a passage that I have actually never preached on before for resurrection, which is kind of difficult to do considering there's only a select few. And the longer you do it, chances are you've pretty much covered them all. But here is something different. And I noticed this based off of, as you'll see, some of the things that I've been seeing. So here we are. Oh, yes. Always need a good title. So the title for this one, Resurrection in a Post-Truth World. Now, let's look at the book, the Gospel of Matthew. We'll start in Matthew 27. We'll have the scripture up on the screen as well for you following along. And here we are, Matthew chapter 27, starting in verse 62. I'm getting used to holding a Bible with a handheld microphone. Normally I have that other thing, but I kind of like this. I want to change it up a little bit. I got bored of that wireless thing. So the next day, the day after Jesus was crucified, the one after preparation day, the chief priests, the Pharisees, they went to Pilate. They said, "Sir, we remember that while Jesus was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days, I will rise again.' So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he has been raised from the dead." And I love this line. "This last deception will be worse than the first." If this rumor goes around, if this story gets around, it's going to be even worse than all the things that he did and said before he was killed. So Pilate answered, "Take a guard, go make the tomb as secure as you know how." Like, get everyone positioned right there, armor, swords, get the cameras so we can make sure that no one does anything funny with this tomb. Make it as secure as you possibly can. It's like Alcatraz, right? Whatever you can do, just make sure that no one can come through and do something to the body. And so they went and they made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard. Now let's continue, go down a little bit here the next morning after the Sabbath. Let's see, okay, so we'll pick up in verse 5. And the women, followers of Jesus, they go to the tomb and they've been there for a little while. Verse 5, there's an angel at the tomb, which naturally, of course, right, exactly what you would expect whenever you go to the tomb of a loved one. There's an angel there. And the women, you know, they're afraid because they go in and they're like, whoa, what happened here? The stone is gone. Angel says, don't be afraid, for I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified, but he is not here. He has risen just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay, and then go quickly and tell his disciples. He has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. And I love this last line of the angel. Now I have told you. It's like, that's it. I'm done speaking. I've done my part. Drop the mic. Exactly. Yeah. Now I've done my part. I'm out of here. So the women hurried away from the tomb. And here's another great line. I mean, there's so much here packed into these couple of verses. And this is pretty much, to a certain extent, what Camilla was talking about. Afraid yet filled with joy. You ever experienced this before? You're filled with joy, but yet there's still a little apprehension. There's some fear. They sit side by all the emotions we experience. That's how it works. They just sit side by side. Very rarely do we experience one. They're always kind of mixed in there together. So they're afraid yet filled with joy, and they ran to tell his disciples, but suddenly Jesus met them. Greetings. It's like just raised from the dead. Greetings. As if he doesn't have anything better to say. That's like the greetings. I guess that's what you say when you get raised from the dead. Greetings. Hello. So they came to him, they clasped his feet and worshiped him. And then Jesus said to them, don't be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me. Don't be afraid. Allow the joy to overtake the fear. Yeah, it might still be there, but allow the joy to guide you. Allow the joy to lead you, the excitement and the hope. All the possibility that is here present in the moment, allow that to lead you and now go and spread this news. Now, we continue because there's more. The plot thickens. Verse 11, while the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and they reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. Now, when the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, because again, this deception was going to be worse than the first. So they had to come up with a plan to explain this all the way. Like, what are we going to tell people? We can't let this rumor get around, so we better come up with something. They gave the soldiers a large sum of money. They're bribing them. They're paying them off. They're paying for their silence. And, well, not their silence, because you are to say, his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep. In other words, we're a bunch of buffoons. We didn't have enough coffee. We couldn't stay awake. Someone came, and while we were sleeping, they snuck in. They rolled the stone out of the way, and they stole the body, and we totally missed it. We had too much wine to drink that night. Because if this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble. So the soldiers took the money, and they did as they were instructed. And this story about them falling asleep and someone coming to steal the body, this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. Look at that last line. This story has been widely circulated. Many, in other words, many people have heard this story. And not just when the story was made up, but people continue to this very, years later, this story is still in circulation. Now, this might possibly be the first case of a disinformation campaign. Yeah, we've been hearing about this for many, many years. A fake campaign, fake news. This is propaganda. I mean, this is deception all throughout. We can't let this story get out. We can't let people think that he actually did the thing that he was going to do. So we have to make up a story, and we need to spread this story as far as we possibly can. Now, we can go to the next slide. What we have here, when we read through this story, we have multiple stories about what happened. There are multiple stories competing for the truth. Jesus was raised from the dead, or someone came and stole the body of Jesus. Both of these stories were in circulation. Both of these stories were being spread all throughout the region to as many people as they could possibly be spread to. Now, a couple of weeks back, I watched a documentary. Maybe some of you have seen this before, The Social Dilemma. Who's seen this documentary? Right, a couple of us have. Now, why? Did you see it? Oh, no. So this one's on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, it's worth checking out. Here's how this documentary is described. This documentary drama hybrid explores the dangerous human impact of social networking with tech experts sounding the alarm on their own creations. I was talking to someone, I think it was yesterday, and I was telling him about this documentary. I'm like, "Did you watch this thing?" And he's like, "You know what? I turned it off halfway through because I was so depressed." Maybe not the documentary you want to watch on Resurrection Sunday. But what this documentary is doing, it's exposing some of the dangers of social media, some of the ways that we connect online. And we can go one more slide here. What's happening, one of the dangers that they talk about is that the more we use social media, the more we go online and use Google, other search engines, the more that we just simply do things online, well, it becomes harder and harder to know what is actually true. One of the dangers they spoke to is the inability for us to actually distinguish which story is true, because there are so many different stories, so many different opinions, so much research, so many different narratives that are saying, this is what's true, you should believe this, and you should follow this. What they were concerned about is that disinformation can easily be spread by people. So now when you're there staring at your screen, you're kind of left confused a little bit, and it's like a rabbit hole where you get one thing, and then it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper, and maybe something is inaccurate, but it's displayed as being true, and you believe that, well, then it just takes you deeper and deeper and deeper into the hole, and now you have absolutely no idea what truth happens to be. And so at the end of this documentary, a whole bunch of the people being interviewed, there was this call. There was this plea to protect the truth. For all of us living in the world, all of us who use social media, all of us who use social networks, the internet, which is many of us, I'm sure, they were saying, truth is what's at stake. We need to make sure that we protect the truth at all costs. Which I remember feeling a little unsettled after finishing the documentary, because there's a question for me that was raised, and the question is, well, then who gets to define the truth? Who in our world today gets to define the truth? Was this not a question 2,000 years ago in the first century when Jesus was raised? Who in the first century defined the truth of what happened? Was it the chief priests, the elders, and Pilate? Those who were in power, those who had something to lose, and they wanted to maintain their power, their control at all costs? Is it that group that gets to define the truth, or is it another group? Is there a different truth at work in the world? Think about for us in our lives today, well then, and this was the question after watching this documentary, who gets to define the truth? Is it the politicians? Do they get to define truth for us? What about the tech companies? Are they the ones who get to define what is true and which information gets released to us as we scroll through? And we're going to do a whole series on this coming up in a couple of months. Is it the wealthy? Is it the ones who are in power? The ones who are in control? Which group gets to define the truth? And that was never answered in the documentary. Is it just those on the top who get to define for all of us what is actually true and then what's in disinformation? Or is there a deeper truth at work in the world? Let's go one more slide. Let's look at these competing stories in the first century. Let's go back to Matthew's gospel. Remember, we have the story of the disciples stole the body, or Jesus was raised from the dead. And if you were alive in the first century and you didn't actually physically see Jesus after he was resurrected, and not many people did, a select few saw Jesus after he was raised from the dead. So if you're one of these who's hearing it from someone else, you're like, your neighbor comes up to you and like, hey, I saw Jesus, or I heard this story about Jesus. You're like, well, hold on a second, because Billy down the street just told me that the guards fell asleep, they drank too much that night, and someone came and stole the body. So what's the actual truth? I mean, this question about resurrection, it's been around right from the beginning. So if we were to look a little deeper into these two competing stories, let's first check out this first story, the disinformation campaign. And remember, why was this story created? Because if people started believing that Jesus was raised from the dead, this deception, as it was called, would be even worse than what came before. So why was this story created? This was a story that was created out of fear. Fear of what those at the top might lose. They might lose control. They might lose some of their power. And so they created this story because they wanted to protect their interests at all costs. This was a story that was rooted in fear, rooted in what they could possibly lose. This was a story that's all about that group, us, our group, the ones at the top, at the expense of everyone else. So it was a story that was meant to benefit only a select few rather than the larger population. It was a story in which the people who created it, they only cared about themselves and what they currently possessed, and they wanted to make sure that they didn't actually lose that. So in other words, whenever you create a story like this, well, now you've created winners in the story and losers in the story. There's us, and then there's everyone else. It's a story of scarcity. There's not enough to go around for everyone, whatever enough happens to be. And so we need to do what we can to hold on to everything, even creating a story to make sure that others don't stop believing us and giving us power. Now, let's look at the second story, the story of Jesus being raised from the dead, the story of resurrection. This, and we saw some of these characteristics as we read through Matthew's gospel, it's a story of joy, a story of hope, a story of excitement, of possibility, of new life. So I created another chart for us like I did a couple of weeks ago. And let's look at the first story. The first story is a story about fear, about self-interest, about me and my group, about winners and losers. The second story is a story about peace, joy, excitement, and hope, which then begs the question, well, which is the better story to shape your life around? Just rationally speaking, which is the story that you would rather shape your life around? No takers on resurrection? Yeah, I mean, which is the better world to live in? A world of fear? A world of looking out only for yourself? A world of protecting what you have and making sure that others don't get a piece of it? And what kind of a world is that? And that creates a world of injustice. It creates a world of selfishness. It creates a self-centered world where it's all about you and your group, and who cares what happens to them? I mean, it just sucks all of the hope out of the room when you live in a world like this. But think about that second world. I mean, how many of you would like to live in a world where every morning you wake up filled with hope? A world where, sure, there's some fear, but yet there's also joy that overwhelms the fear. I mean, imagine waking up in a world like that every morning. Like, yeah, okay, I know I have to go through this. I know it's not going to be the easiest thing to go through, but I'm going to have joy walking with me. See, here's the thing. Whenever we talk about our social networks today, the truth is many of us, we can sit side by side in the same room, yet we exist in a completely different world than the person who's right next to you. And that's a really scary thought. One person's world can be filled with fear, while the person sitting next to you right now, their world can be filled with joy, all because of the stories that we believe, the stories that we allow to shape our lives. So the truth is, believing in resurrection, yeah, it's a choice. It's a choice that we have to continue to make. We don't make it just once on Easter and say, I believe Jesus raised from the dead. Great, awesome. Now I can go on and eat my turkey or lamb or ham or whatever you happen to eat. But rather, living by the truth of resurrection, it's an intentional choice that we make every day, because that is the choice that shapes the world that we live in. And here's what I believe. At the heart of resurrection is the question, what kind of a world do you believe we're living in? See, this is the question that resurrection asks us. This is the question that resurrection asked all the way right from the beginning, 2,000 years ago, and it's the same question for us today. What kind of a world do you truly believe we get to live in? A world where only a select few win? A world where you're by yourself? A world where that which you see is the end? Or are we living in a world where that which you see, well, there's actually something more beyond what you can physically see with your eyes? And there's a hope, there's a joy that's actually bigger and stronger than anything you can be going through in life. What kind of a world do you truly believe we're living in? It's the question of what kind of a world or what kind of a God do you believe is present in this creation? So I took a picture a couple of weeks ago, and these are some trees in the front of our yard. What do you notice about these trees? There's no leaves on them. Clearly, this is a winter, early springtime picture. They look a bit, I mean, it was a gray day, of course, but it's just, they look a bit like death, do they not? Now, I took this picture because I remembered a couple years back, I captured these trees in all their glory. So we can go one more slide. In a couple of weeks, probably about a week or two, this is what those trees will look like. Go back one slide. Here's the trees now. 2 weeks. That's what the trees are going to look like. Resurrection is built into the very fabric of this creation. You witness this every single year. I know sometimes we think, well, resurrection, that's a crazy idea. How could that possibly be true? Resurrection is, it's innate to the creation. Whenever you see trees that have lost their leaves and there's nothing on them, you're witnessing a death. But yet every spring, that which has died comes back to life. It's a rhythm. It's a natural rhythm of this creation. So yeah, resurrection can seem like a crazy, far-fetched idea. I get it. Or we can just look to the trees to see that which is true about this universe that we live in. Over the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about putting things to death, letting go of certain things in our life, all so that we can experience new life and new resurrection. And if you're like me, maybe you've experienced this before, where you have let go of something, or something has been forcibly been ripped out of your hands, and you thought that was the end. And then a couple of weeks later, a couple of months, maybe a couple of years later, you come to discover something new that was birthed in the defeat, in the loss, in that which you let go of. This is the natural rhythm of the creation. Death to life. Death to life. See, I would argue that the proof of resurrection, we can try to rationally prove it, but then you're just sitting across the table from someone and having these rational intellectual arguments in your head, which very rarely end well. Normally everyone goes home angry and upset and, oh, how would they actually believe that? Or the proof of resurrection could be found in the transformation that resurrection produces. Whenever I read through all the different stories of the post-resurrection appearances of Jesus, here's what we discover. We find cynicism is transformed into awe and wonder. We find fear being transformed into peace. Sadness being replaced by hope and joy. A loss of meaning. Think of the disciples. When Jesus died, that was it. End of the story. Where do we go from here? There's nowhere for us to go. And then Jesus appears. The resurrected Christ appears. And now that loss of meaning, that hopelessness, is now transformed into new found meaning. Think about Mary at the tomb. Go and spread the news. Mary was going to the tomb. She never expected that the tomb would be empty. She went there and she found Jesus infuse her life with new meaning and with purpose. We find violence and injustice being replaced by mercy, love, care for all people, grace. And we find shame. Think about Peter. I mean, he was sitting there by the water, so ashamed when he saw Jesus. I denied him three times. How will he ever accept me back? And yet resurrection transforms the shame into forgiveness. This, to me, is the proof of resurrection. And I've experienced this in my life, where there's been times that it's just felt like, oof, how am I ever going to get through this? And then all of a sudden, you have this experience with the resurrected Christ and the fear, the cynicism, the hopelessness is transformed. And it's like you're infused again with new life. So the question at the heart of resurrection is, what kind of world do you truly believe we're living in? Is it a world filled with goodness? Or is it a world where you need to claw your way for everything that you have? Now this morning, I did a little pruning on that tree. And it's funny because when you look at the tree from afar, it looks completely barren. But the closer I got to the tree, I noticed that it's actually already starting to bloom. And Joe has some pieces of the tree, which he's going to, Joe and Farah are going to hand out some pieces of the tree for us this morning. And what you'll notice, it's already starting to bloom. Death is being transformed into new life. And here's what I find really, really interesting about this. All throughout the winter, all the hope of new life, the possibility of new life are right there in the tree. It's like death becomes a catalyst for hope. Death becomes a catalyst for new life. And I want you all to have a piece of that tree this morning. This tree that holds so much potential. Think about what it's going to look like 2 weeks from now. Probably won't happen. Maybe it will. I don't know if you put it in water, but I probably killed it when I... Maybe it'll resurrect if you put it in some water. I don't know. But I want you to carry that with you for the day. Keep it in your car. Don't throw it out in the garbage on the way out of here. I will track you down if I see you throw it on the floor on the way out of here. Okay, I'm just saying right now. But I want you to carry that piece of tree with you for as long as you need to be reminded this is a world of resurrection. This is a world of new life. And whatever you are going through right now, may you trust that the joy will overwhelm it. May you trust the new life, the resurrection that is buried within you in this moment. And there's a verse, there's a scripture, one more scripture I want to read for us. It's in the letter that Paul wrote to the Romans. And this one blows me away every time I read it. Paul writes, "If the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, then he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies because of his spirit who lives in you." This is the invitation of resurrection. To trust that there's a spirit alive in you. To trust this path of Jesus. What did Jesus tell Mary to do? Go and tell my disciples. He's going ahead of you to Galilee. So the disciples had a choice. They could stay where they were, or they could follow Jesus to Galilee. I love that invitation. This is the invitation for us this morning. To trust the path of Jesus. To trust our lives to this Jesus. And as we do so, to experience that forgiveness, the new life, the hope, to trust that the very spirit that raised Christ from the dead is alive in you, bringing hope and new life to all the places that you thought were dead. Let me pray for us.